morning.
Morning.
Well, I suppose this is the subject for the talk. This is called an enso, and sometimes that's translated as a Zen circle. So you've seen, I'm sure, many of them. This is done by Kaz Tanahashi, who will be coming here to give a calligraphy workshop end of August. So, do you have any sense of why this is called a Zen circle?
Is there a proper form in doing it?
Well, I think the I think that's one of the reasons it's been a kind of enduring sort of mark, is because it's so simple. There can't really be a proper way to do it as opposed to the improper way to do it. So it's very elementary. And so whatever one does, it's pretty, what would you say, revealing in a sense, because there isn't much artifice possible in this kind of simplicity. One reason it's, I think, endures is because, as was mentioned, it's usually an imperfect-looking circle. And I have seen one which supposedly was done by Sesshu, who was a famous early painter in Japan, and it's quite large and it's quite thin and it looks like a perfect circle. You know, it's the only one I've ever seen which looks like it's a perfect circle and looks like he really tried to make it a absolutely perfect circle. But all the others I've seen have some kind of interesting irregularity in it, and it's, I think if there were more than one perfect one, it would be very, and they would not attract any attention at all, because all it shows is that somebody has perfect control, but that's it. the line itself is not really very interesting when it's a absolutely perfect circle. One reason for the imperfection, and why the imperfection is interesting, is because of the nature of the brush. Let's see, if I show you on this brush, it's probably easier to see. As you can see, that if you start out with a brush like this, going this way, then by the time you finish, the brush is going the other direction. It's going this way. And so at some point, the brush has to sort of shift from going one way to the other way. And also the hairs that are on the inside of the circle, at the other side, are on the outside of the circle. So there's a lot of sort of shifting going on at some point of the circle. And that point of shift is where often there's an interesting result. And I have seen some people who try to avoid that completely the reason that this happens is because when you're holding the calligraphy brush, you're not permitted to turn it in your fingers like this. If you did, you could keep turning it so that the brush is pointing the same place in relation to the circle all the way around. And then you could make a fairly perfect circle, perfect looking line. But when you're holding a calligraphy brush, you have to keep holding it the same way in your hand. So when you start this way, then you keep holding the brush and then pushing it back this way. Rather than, I have seen some people who sort of twist the arm around so that when you start, you're going this way, and then you can keep the whatever is in the middle of the brush in the middle of the brush all the way around. So, like, this point is facing the center all the way around, and that can make a more perfect-looking line, but it sort of loses the interest of where the brush has to shift. If you keep holding the brush in one way permanently, then at some point the bristles all have to kind of change, and that gives some interest to the line of the circle. I think another reason for calling this a Zen circle is also the experience of doing it. If you decide to do it, then you dip your brush in, and then you. So the doing of it is one thing, and then when you're finished, then you look at it and you say, "Oh my gosh, that's not what I wanted to do at all. It was terrible," or "It's not as good as that one," or "Next time I'm going to do so and so." So in that experience, you shift from this moment of action where you're just doing or being, and the circle is becoming. You shift to this conversation, in your mind, which is our familiar world. So everyone, if any of you want to do this afterwards, you'll all experience that. You'll make it, and then you'll comment on it right away. If you don't, somebody else will. Well, that's fabulous, whatever it is. So I've been mulling over the problem of thought, and I listened to the tape of Eckhart Tolle talking about the present moment and thought as a sort of any thoughts that we have seem to draw us away from the present moment. So I've been thinking about thought, and that of course is quite what would you say, automatically a failure. But what is it about thought itself which is not present or draws us away from the from this presence? The suggestion was let the present be. When we are thinking, we are usually in some sneaky way, we are kind of controlling the this present moment. We are managing it, and in some way defining it, and thereby limiting it, and making it very narrow. And in the chant this morning, instead of using the word emptiness, there was the word, what was the word?
Boundlessness.
Boundlessness, yeah. So this, I think thought can well be the opposite of boundlessness in as far as the present is concerned. Because with thought, we narrow things down, focus them, and in some way we can say, well, the thought is happening in this present moment, which is of course true, but by our thought we are eliminating a great deal of potential experience. So one can become quite concerned with the question of whether one is thinking or not in this moment. And that kind of concern already is not allowing the present, not allowing present or this presence to be. Once I was at something called a dream camp, and one of the things that we were encouraged to do was develop a sense of intuition. And we were kind of removed from any other interactivity with other people. So we could sort of do whatever we wanted and people wouldn't think we were crazy. And we were encouraged to just have some place in our body where we would feel yes, and someplace we'd feel no. And so, like, if you were going out of the room, and then, do you want to go up the stairs? And you would try to feel with your body, yes or no. Or you could also do, you know, left or right, if you wanted to go this way or this way. Anyway, you would try to feel in your body a response rather than making a decision with your mind. So after about 2 days of trying this, it began to become quite easy to feel some sort of you know, yes or no in the body. The body would actually sort of respond. You could you know, depend on it to have something that you could feel. And so then, as that sense increased, then I noticed that I was beginning to sigh an awful lot. Just and the sighing was coming because I was dropping away all of these names of things by which I controlled things in my mind. So, like, instead of saying, now I will open the door, there was just a sense that it was a suitable thing to do. And my mind was not deciding about the door. And then this was happening about everything. So I was sighing with relief because all of these labels and sort of mental controls were dropping away. So I think this is part of our thinking process, is holding on to things and maintaining apparent control. And it uses a lot of energy, actually. So when that's allowed to drop away, then you heave a sigh of relief. So I would like to encourage everyone to further your practice in letting the present be. So anyone who would like to make a circle, please come and do it, and then everyone can comment about it.
Question there?
This one, I assume it's horsehair, but I don't really know. It was one of these